Welcome to the Unstoppable Grit Podcast, where we dive into the mindset shifts and practical tools to help you break through the roadblocks standing between you and achieving your goals. I'm your host, Danielle Kobo, a former Fortune 500 senior sales manager who spent 15 years in the medical device industry and now the best-selling author of the book Unstoppable Grit. Think of this podcast as your go-to source for career advice and burnout prevention strategies to help you build a career and life you love. Now let's get started. Welcome back to another episode of Unstoppable Grit Podcast. Before we dive into today's episode, I really want to thank the listeners out there who purchased my new book, Unstoppable Grit, Breakthrough the Seven Roadblocks Standing Between You and Achieving Your Goals. Because of you, the book has already hit bestseller in many categories, including work-life balance and business, women in business, career guide, job hunting, and top new release in motivational self-help. So thank you to all the listeners out there who purchased the book. Many of you have been sharing feedback on the book and what's been resonating with you. And I'm so happy to hear that the practical strategies that I've been sharing in the book are helping you define success on your own terms, preventing and overcoming burnout, and building a career and life that you love. I love hearing the feedback from all the listeners who have been reading the book, diving into the pages, and have found themselves in those pages. So thank you so much for sharing. Now for today's episode. Are you feeling exhausted due to missed opportunities or the pursuit of success? If so, know that you're not alone. If you're in sales, we often face high pressure and intense competition. However, what if there is a way to overcome these challenges? That's what we're going to be talking about on today's episode. We're going to be featuring the powerhouse of perseverance, Lisa Jacobs. Hi, Lisa. Thank you so much for joining the podcast today.
Thank you for having me, Danielle.
Well, you have had a very highly successful career in med tech sales. And before we get into that, I would love to talk about what transpired over the past couple of years and how we got connected. You were actually a result of losing your house in the Hurricane Ian, which September 28th, 2022, Category 4, winds up to 162 miles per hour. I did some research on this hurricane. It was the number three costliest hurricane and the deadliest hurricane since 1935. And you were among one of the people that lost everything in this hurricane. And I'm first so sorry that this took place. I can't imagine the stress and the feeling of losing everything. But share with us your experience of going through the hurricane and what you experienced during that time.
Sure. Thank you. Yes. So it was interesting. You know, I heard about the hurricane coming and I was in my zone. You know, I was actually in Philadelphia at a surgeon dinner. My husband was begging me not to go. And I remember sitting next to my colleague and saying, you know, I don't know if we should be here. I think we should go home early. And we were trying to change our flights, but we weren't really concerned about it, but we did change to the earliest flight. And we just wanted to get home to be with our kids. My oldest son goes to USF and was evacuated and was home. So I wanted to make sure I was home with him and my husband, but didn't really think much of it. You know, we've been through hurricanes before and never had water in our house. Just some tree damage, but this one was quite different. And we got back. My husband owns his business. We secured that business. And then we went home and we waited. We got food. We did everything that you normally do, secure the house. But, you know, within 10 hours, water started dripping into the house. And it first came through the door jams and we were putting towels down. And then all of a sudden, it just started pouring through the windows nonstop. And we grabbed the dog, we grabbed a cooler, and we all ran upstairs. Luckily, we remodeled our house and we had our master bedroom, the only room upstairs. And luckily, we probably wouldn't have survived if we didn't do that. And I think it was from that time until the next day, about 10 a.m., that we were in the house and we had 6 feet of water in our first floor. And I sat up at night watching it come up the stairs and it came up to about the sixth stair. And we sat there and the roof was moving. We saw the water coming up right to the house. We had about 7 boats in our backyard. We live on a canal in South Fort Myers. And I have to say, it was the scariest moment for our lives. And especially my son, who was 20 years old at the time. It was a horrible experience for the three of us, but we were there throughout the entire storm. We left the next day with a kayak and a paddleboard that we brought in the house. And we went to one of our friends' house, and we were truly homeless for 6 months after that, living in Airbnb or hotels or with friends until we could figure out what was next.
And for those of those that are not familiar with hurricanes, when you say we're going to fly back to the hurricane, there might be people out there that going, why would you be flying to the hurricane versus leaving the hurricane? And I know I used to think that because I'm originally from California, until I moved to Florida and I realized the preparation that needs to go into preparing for a hurricane. And also too, I don't know how you felt about this particular hurricane, but it was not projected to hit Fort Myers. In fact, it was projected to hit Tampa, where I'm at. And at the very last second, it made a sharp turn and just hovered over Fort Myers and devastated Fort Myers, Sarasota, Sanibel Island. I mean, billions upon billions of dollars of damage were in this hurricane. So I just wanted to kind of share that perspective with people. When you're hearing we flew to the hurricane,
right,
it's really because we weren't anticipating it to be down there, and preparation needs to go into that. I have never seen a hurricane like this. I experienced Irma, and I've shared my own experience with Irma on previous episodes, but to have the devastation of losing everything is not something that happens often, even with the devastating hurricanes we have.
True. And, you know, as you mentioned, it wasn't supposed to hit Fort Myers. It was supposed to hit Tampa. That's why my son was evacuated. And I wanted to be with my family. And by the time we were done preparing, I was the last flight in that day. The airport closed. There was no gas. There was no hotels. You know, the only option we would have had is to drive across the state. But, you know, we did look at potentially staying with friends across the state. But, you know, again, there wasn't gas and we didn't even know if we could make it. So when hurricanes turn like this, as much as you want to be prepared, there's not much time they give you before you know you have to be secured and hunkered down. Plus, there were horrible winds and tornadoes. Our whole front yard, we had 100-year-old oaks. There was a tornado before the hurricane that tore down all of our trees, and we were barricaded inside the house. So that was another issue that we were facing.
And that's an element, too, that you bring up about the limited resources that are available when hurricanes happen. It becomes a frenzy of finding supplies the week leading up to the hurricane. The benefit, I would say, the one benefit and silver lining with hurricanes, and my experience is, we have notice. So coming from California, where we have devastating earthquakes, we don't have notice on the earthquakes. They just happen and startle us. But with hurricanes, we at least have notice, we can prepare, we can get everything settled. However, resources become very, very limited when hurricanes happen. So all the water is typically out, all the food is out of the grocery stores, gas is typically out, because people are not only filling up their cars, but people are also filling up gas tanks for generators. And then two, also the element of traffic from evacuations. I remember when Irma hit us, it took my sister-in-law, and normally it takes about 6 hours or 8 hours to drive to Atlanta. It took her 13 hours because all the roadways were just jam-packed with people trying to evacuate. So sometimes it doesn't make sense to evacuate because, as you're saying, you never know what to expect and if you're going to be able to because of power lines down or trees down or not having the resources that you need to actually drive the distance.
Mm-hmm. After the hurricane was actually worse because you heard all the military planes coming in. There was a lot of elderly, you know, on the beach. We have a lot of friends' parents who died. They estimated that there were 80 bodies floating around Fort Myers Beach. I mean, there were houses that were absolutely gone. So we were very fortunate. You know, when we went outside, there were people on their rooftop sitting there asking for help. So there wasn't much of that in the news. There were a lot of people at Walmart. We're lucky that we were able to buy another house 6 months later. We just sold last week our house that was in the hurricane. We decided there was too much pain and devastation there, and we didn't want to tear it down and rebuild. We are away from the water at the moment, but we love that house. We got married on the lot. My kids were raised there. So there was a lot of emotions about leaving that and losing everything and having to rebuild. But the aftermath of helping and the amount of people that came and the people I worked with at the time at Excellus, they all drove over from Palm Beach and helped. And I will be forever grateful for all the people who did help us after. But unfortunately, it was mostly churches and local people helping. There wasn't much outside help, as you would expect.
Well, let's talk about recovery, because you have been able to, this was only a year and a half ago. Mm-hmm. And since then, you've bought a new house, you've been able to rebuild, you've been able to get a new job. You've had a lot of shifts in your life since this time. How did you, with your mindset, like how did you get through that situation? That's got to be a devastating situation to get through. So what steps did you take to help yourself recover from that situation?
I do this with a lot of when I have obstacles in my life or devastation or things that are hard. I compartmentalize. You know, when I'm at work, I'm locked in. I'm incredibly laser focused. And whatever I'm working on at that in the moment. I used to get distracted a lot, and I realized to be incredibly productive, I have to be completely locked into what I'm doing. So when I'm at work, I'm completely focused on that. But when I have to deal with things at home, I deal with that separately. And I actually have a productivity cube that I use. So when I'm working on projects at home, I, you know, 45 minutes, that's what I'm working on. That's what I'm doing. But it is a mindset that you have to be cognizant of all the time of how to be laser focused and locked in with what you're doing and not to let outside emotions or other things going on in your life affect what your goal is and what your dreams are. You know, and I was incredibly motivated because, you know, we were very comfortable. We paid off our house, we paid off our cars. I have two kids in college, and my children are typically my biggest motivator. You know, I want them to have more than I did. I want them to have more opportunities. So I work incredibly hard to provide that for them. So I knew that I needed to continue and work and go towards my goals. It actually made me level up because I knew that I had to take myself and my career, my finances to the next level to shorten my curve of everything I just lost. So I worked harder. You know, I absolutely wanted more. So it did actually level me up.
What was the biggest learning lesson when you reflect back into this past year and a half and what you've gone through and where you are today? What was the biggest learning lesson for you?
That you really don't need much. You know, I haven't replaced everything that I lost. And there is very few things that you really need. If you have, you know, your family and the things that are important to you, know, I lost all the baby pictures. I lost all the yearbooks. I lost all of that. And luckily we have a lot digitized now. But, you know, for me to be successful at work, all I needed was my laptop and a new car, and I was able to run with it. Right. So, you know, sometimes I think that we think we need certain clothes or certain briefcase or we need this or that to be successful. You don't. And I think that's what I like about the grit, right? It's just the basics you need, and you need your knowledge and you need tenacity and you need to be resilient and persistent to be successful. And that's it. You don't need much more than that.
Are you feeling stuck in your career and looking for guidance on what steps to take next? Do you feel burnt out with the demands of work and life? If so, order your copy of the best-selling book called Unstoppable Grit. It's time to stop just surviving and start thriving. Order your copy of Unstoppable Grit on Amazon today. And once you've placed your order, head over to daniellekobo.com/book to receive your free courageous goal-setting guide, which will provide you with the actionable steps to achieve your goals. So don't wait any longer. Order your copy of the best-selling book, Unstoppable Grit, today. There's a lot of times it's easy to get caught up into the society of the need. I need to have this to be successful. I need to have that to be successful, whatever it is. And you break it down to the simplistic elements of, at the end of the day, we really don't need very many material things. And we can get so caught up in the, I need that to be successful, when really what we need is to believe in ourselves, to have the grit, to have the tenacity, the resilience, to have that drive, because success is within us, whether we have all the material things that we need, or we don't. You think about some of the people that have come out of extreme poverty have not had the same opportunities, but they've had the drive, they've had the grit, they've had the tenacity to keep going. So you've had a really successful career in medical sales. And when you think about your career, what do you believe has led to some of your success in going from an individual contributor role, being in sales, and then growing into a VP of sales?
I think is listening and having compassion with people, whether it's the surgeon who is giving feedback on your product or on the company, whether it is the sales rep who is learning. But I think where the biggest misses on a lot of these companies is that they don't listen to feedback, whether it's from the customer, whether it's from the VAC committee, and listen to everybody who's has the boots on the street and who is testing your business model, who is, you know, using the product and giving feedback. Sometimes a lot of decisions are made on the boardroom with people who aren't front facing. So I think my success is that I'm happy to go into cases and see how the technology is working. I have lots of conversations with all different stakeholders, but then also in the boardroom, I can give accurate, scalable feedback so companies can grow and scale very quickly.
I see that as well a lot of times in organizations where a lot of the decisions are made at the top end level without having the perspective of, as you say, the boots on the ground, the ones that are interacting with the customers on a day-to-day basis. And I'm a true believer that the best resource an organization has is its employees, and especially the employees that are in the customer service department, the employees that are the sales reps, because they have the direct interaction on a day-to-day basis with the customers and understanding what their challenges are, what their needs are, and exactly what it's going to take to take that business to the next level. So I agree with you 100% that the biggest lesson to take away for executive leadership is to really take the time to listen to your team, ask them questions, get them involved in the decision-making process, get them involved in hearing feedback as well. And when they're doing assessments, actually take the feedback, listen to it, and then respond to it too. That's another area that I see organizations where they'll ask for feedback and they either do nothing with it or they don't actually provide a report back so that the employees feel like they've been heard.
Correct. And same with surgeons. You know, surgeons want to be heard. Surgeons, you know, if they're having problems with a case, sometimes they're like, what is the surgeon doing wrong? Well, no, that's not always, it's usually not the answer. You know, there may be a new instrument needed for a product, or there may be some pearls of the product that we're not doing in training. So truly listening to the customer, I think, is the most important. And I care about people. I care about not only them on a professional level, but on a personal level. You know, where do they want to be in a year, 5 years? What are their goals? How, you know, where do they want to be? Do they want to get to the executive level? Are they happy where they're at? Or how to keep people passionate about what they're doing? Because that's when you have success in sales, is when you keep that passion, because it's a tough industry. You get beat up a lot. You get said no to a lot. So how do you keep that fire in people's bellies every day to go out and sell?
Yeah. Now, when we talk about sales, you have this perspective of being in sales and also the perspective of being a leader in sales. And for our listeners, whether they're in sales or not, I believe that there's a particular mindset, a particular behavior, personality that really thrives in sales. What are some of the types of characteristics that you see when it comes to being successful in sales?
You have to be obviously incredibly motivated. And what does motivated mean, right? It means that you consistently do the actionable items it takes to be successful every day. So I think that that is something internal that you can't teach people. And when I interview people, I'm always looking for that quality. You know, there's just certain characteristics that people who can be persistent, who don't get down if they're said no too many times. Also, a pleasant personality that you listen more than you speak. I think a lot of time you have a widget that you want to sell and you have that in the mind, but the surgeon may be having a different problem right now with different products and you're not listening to what his problems are, and you could probably sell something else in your bag other than the widget that, you know, you have in your hand that you're trying to sell. Also, you know, just having fun. You know, one company, one CEO I worked with said, whistle while you work. If you love what you do and you ooze passion and you're having fun while you're doing it, people want to work with you. They want to see that you love what you do. They want to help you. So I think that's really important, not just to wear the company badge, but also why are you there? And I think in sales, especially in medical sales, you have to believe in what you're selling.
When it comes to hiring, I was a hiring manager for 7 years and looking for those key characteristics of drive and motivation, because I can teach someone the products, I can teach them the industry, but I can't teach somebody to wake up every single morning and have the drive to go out and cold call, to go out and meet with customers, to have the resilience to bounce back after setbacks. Mm-hmm. So being able to have like having those innate characteristics and that drive to succeed, a lot of times is either in someone or not. Now, it can be learned and it can grow, but it's a characteristic that it really, when you look at all areas of business, whether you're in sales, whether you own a business, or also somebody that runs marathons and exercise, it's that drive to just keep going forward and to not let those setbacks define or to stop at that moment. So action is key. Absolutely.
Definitely.
And you talked too about, I like that, whistle as you work. There was a guest on my podcast, Courtney Clark, and she said a profound statement that really resonated. And it was, burnout is not a result of working long hours. Burnout is a result of lack of purpose and passion in what you do.
I love that. That absolutely resonates with me as well. But it's true. If you are not passionate or you're disgruntled with the company that you work for, I think it's time just to move on. You know, you have to love what you're doing. You have to be excited about it. And you have to be on the same mission as the entire team. It has to be one team, one mission, and you execute together. You have to be sometimes an individual contributor, but you also have to be a team contributor. So I really like to hire people who are athletes because they understand that mindset, or people who've been in the military because they also have that mindset.
Yeah, I remember there was a hiring manager that we, at the company that I worked for, we always did co-interviews. So we would interview together and they would always ask, is there any sports that you played in high school? And it could possibly be a deal breaker when it looks at two quality candidates. And the reason being is because he saw the emphasis of working in and having a sports background is being a team player, that competitiveness, that drive, the consistency. Those characteristics that you see in that team sport kind of always was that little one differentiator on why we would hire that particular person, even though two quality candidates. And it's interesting because a lot of times people won't necessarily share that they played a high school sport. And I'm like, share that. That's absolutely relevant because those are the key skills and core competencies that we learn at just a very early age that evolve into where we're at today that leads to our success.
Absolutely. I completely agree.
So where kind of you have started this networking group, Stripes, and I'd love for you to share with our audience what this group is and the mission that you hold in helping others.
Yes. So Stripes is a women's network in med tech. And why we started it is I was speaking to a lot of women, especially on LinkedIn and in medical sales college when I was teaching. And they were looking for organization, not just for executive women, but women who are just getting started, whether you're in customer service or you're a C-suite executive. This is for absolutely inclusive for everybody. We are having a mentorship program where you can ask any questions on how do I do a job interview? How do I ask for that promotion? How do I ask for the raise? You know, just a networking. What obstacles are you having in your industry? If you're having your first boardroom meeting and you're in a sea of middle-aged white men in suits, how do you conduct yourself to get the respect that you deserve? So it is unique in that sense where it's all-encompassing of all women. We do have men join sometimes as well for some of our webinars, but we do have monthly webinars and we just started a group called Breakthrough. So breaking the glass ceilings, and I created a workbook that people can use to help their goals in 2024. So we have a panelist interview coming up shortly where we get international women as well. So we get people from around the globe who want to join and who want to network and want to help each other out. And I think that as women, instead of pinning each other against each other in this industry, that we have to raise each other up and we all can win together. You know, I've had a lot of mentors in my life who are men, but there seems to be more and more women coming in med tech and med device. And I just wanted to have a place, a safe place where women could go that they could share their problems or successes and feed off each other and hold each other accountable and be energized with each other.
I believe something we've needed for a long time. I wish that this resource existed when I first started in my career, because I started my career when I was 23 years old, and it was a predominantly male-dominated industry in capital equipment sales. I was one of 7 women out of 100 sales reps in the company. And the stories and the experience that I had definitely developed grit early on at an age in my career, but it would have been so nice to have a program and a network like what you've created with Stripes that is going to help guide and provide resources to women to really succeed. And for the men that are joining in on those webinars, thank you for advocating and trying to just understand a different perspective and looking at ways to support. So thank you for joining for those men.
It's wonderful. I know I have a great group of men who are reposting all the Stripes information, and I am so thankful. And it's actually giving me a new motivation. I love the outreach. I love talking to people. I have a co-founder, Brandy, who I've worked with for years. She does the marketing standpoint of it. I do more of the sales, obviously, of getting speakers. And Danielle, I know that you're coming up, so we thank you for that. But, you know, it's just been so wonderful. And we just started it about 6 months ago, and we are growing very quickly. So it shows that there's a need for something like this in the industry.
Yes, there absolutely is. And you're part of the Chief community as well. I saw that you're a Chief member.
Yes. And, you know, that's why I actually, one reason why I started Stripes, because I love Chief and I met an amazing group of women. But unfortunately, in Florida, there wasn't a networking there where you can go and meet people live. But the medical device network was a little slim. So, and that was the main reason why I joined, is I wanted more of that. So I figured, if it's not there, then why not just start it on our own? Because obviously there's a need for it.
Absolutely. So if it doesn't exist, we can create it. And that's a great message too, because if there's something out there that we truly believe that there's a need for, that it's going to make a difference, then we get to be the creators of it. We don't need to wait for somebody else to create it. We get to create it ourselves. So I'm grateful for people like you that are out there creating programs and networks to help other people. It's something that we need.
Thank you.
Well, thank you so much for joining today's podcast. I really appreciate it, and sharing your message about resilience and overcoming this hurricane that you went through, and also the qualities and characteristics it takes to succeed in sales.
Thank you, Danielle.
Well, for those that are listening, thank you so much for joining Unstoppable Grit Podcast with Danielle Cobo. I really am grateful for your listenership. And if you enjoyed today's episode, please share this episode with your friends, your family, your colleagues. If you know somebody who is in medical sales and this message will resonate with them, please share it and continue to expand the network of the Unstoppable Grit Podcast. And until next week, be unstoppable. Thank you for listening to the Unstoppable Grit Podcast with Danielle Cobo. If you found today's episode resonating and inspiring, kindly take a moment to craft a review. Your review holds the potential for Apple and Spotify to share the Unstoppable Grit Podcast with others. Furthermore, consider extending the ripple effect by sharing this episode with those around you, family, friends, colleagues, and anyone who could benefit from the insights and stories shared here. Also, be sure to visit daniellecobo.com for more resources on cultivating resilience and unleashing your inner grit. We'll be back soon with another empowering episode. Until then, be unstoppable.